Good morning, everybody. I think most of you know me by now, but I'm Millie Schamberger. I'm the Business Programs Coordinator for the American Home Brewers Association. I'm really excited to introduce to you this husband and wife duo, Kristen and Stephen Gerard, from the Vine and Hop Shop in Ohio. I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about them before we get started with their inventory management presentation. So Kristen is, they're both owners of the shop. Kristen is a home brewer and a winemaker since 2006. She opened the Vine and Hop Shop in May 2015. Since she's opened the store, she's consistently increased her sales by more than 40% annually. She also founded the homebrew club, The Brewing Ring in Medina, in 2015. And aside from brewing, she's a mom to five rambunctious boys ages 8 to 24 and the wife of her brewing partner, Steve. And Steve he's been a homebrew and winemaker also since 2006 and helped with the opening with the hop shop in May 2015. He's the head brewer at Vine and Hop Shop, Nano Brewery and Winery. And on top of brewing, he's a full-time minister at St. Mark Lutheran Church, and he's also the dad to five rambunctious boys. So help me in welcoming Kristen and Stephen Gerard.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. So over the past few months, you know, we share the good word about HomebrewCon and tell folks that, you know, we're going to be presenting here. And they're all excited. They're like, that's awesome. What's your topic? And we're like, inventory management. And they're a little bit dejected to learn that their local homebrew store has the amazing task of talking to other homebrew store owners about something that doesn't pertain to them at all. But I think that's where they're wrong. It does pertain to them very much so. Because as retailers, you know that we have to know what the homebrewers want, and we have to have it, and when do you have to have it? Now. There's no waiting. They don't seem to always plan as well as they could. So while to the average homebrewer, inventory management is not interesting or exciting, it means that we are on top of the industry and we know what's selling. Therefore, we have it in stock for them. So as was mentioned, we're the owners of the Vine and Hop Shop, opened up in May of 2015, located in Brunswick. Our suburb of Cleveland has approximately 40,000 people in it. And we had no retail management experience before that. We had worked retail and done some things, but we weren't purveyors at all. We were just two home brewers and winemakers, and the closest shop to us was about 45 minutes away. So we did our surveys, determined a need, and we sought to fill it. Since then, our sales have consistently increased about 40% each year. But as we grew, one of the things that was a challenge was inventory management. Now, the first year of ordering, probably for many of you, I pray you didn't have to experience this, but most of us do, it was a nightmare. We were used to what we used for brewing, but just because we had it and wanted it and used it for our own home brewing and winemaking, we ended up being forced to order almost weekly, and that's a pain. Fortunately, our customers were very patient and willing for us to wait and place the order. And we, probably like many of you, have a wonderful, loyal customer base who's very supportive of your shop. And if we don't have a product, they're usually willing to wait to order it, and know that it might not be in for 1 or 2 weeks. But still, in the days of Amazon, one-day shipping, I really want to give a shout-out and thanks to our customers. And I pray that's the way yours are as well. Now, I want to talk about a few of the mistakes that we made our first year back. Like many, you start off in your first month, and you see what you sold for your first month, and you say, oh, I just want to replenish that stock, repurchase what you did, and you're only looking 1 month ahead. What's coming up right around the bend. The system that Kristen is going to be diving into in depth is going to actually have you cover 4 months of sales. That relieves a lot of the stress that you can have if you're only looking 1 month ahead. Now, after a year of sales, we had enough information in our POS to go through and set minimums and maximums. Sounds like a reasonable plan. We set the minimum, we set the maximum that we sold over a 12-month period, and this is dead wrong. That is not a good way to do things. Why? Well, because if you've done this for any amount of time, you realize that many products become seasonal. Perfect example is cider kits. We sell a ton August through December. We're not selling nearly as many January through April. So having 30 cider kits sitting on our shelf, taking up our capital and the ability for us to get the items that are necessary, is just not a good way. So minimum and maximum, ordering for 1 month, these are very bad ideas. Mostly because what's going to end up happening to you is, if you're like us, you're going to ask yourself the question, if business is so great, if we have so many sales, why aren't we making any money? If you answered yes to that, it's a very common predicament. Sales seem just fine, but every time you look at your checking account, it's tight. Your accountant and possibly your tax return even might say you're making a profit, but you don't see any of that extra money in your paycheck. It's a common predicament that hits very close to home. You see, Kristen and I, when we work hard at our business and we see our sales grow, we wonder, why aren't things turning the corner? Why aren't things generating cash and profits that should be coming from the business? At the end of the year, there's never really enough money left in the bank. It's because we didn't possess probably the most important skill that you can have as a homebrew store owner, and that is inventory management. You must have those to be successful. They will help with your customers keeping the things in stock that ought to be, and they will help with you and your cash flow and your profitability, because if you don't have it, it becomes a difficult sell. Your inventory is the lifeblood of your business, and you need to treat it that way, because your business does depend on it. Now, when we first opened, we wanted to be the Mercedes-Benz, the Rolls-Royce, the Bugatti of homebrew stores, so we went out and we bought all of these super awesome, shiny, half-barrel fermenters with clamps and all kind of stuff. Put your hand up if you did that, too. You got any of those showpieces? Just us, dummies. Listen, they were super sweet items. And homebrewers would walk in and they would go, ooh. And they'd be like, do you have an airlock? Yes, we have airlocks. Fortunately, we always had lots of airlocks. So our customers were understanding when we had to place those orders. But they could have easily just gone online, and then we would have lost the business, and that's profitability and all of those other kinds of things. And then you have stacks of customer order forms, and then you have to have your customer stuff pulled out of the delivery, and then you have to call them, and then they have to come back to the store, which is, you know, kind of asking a lot out of a customer who can just click from the comfort of their own underwear. So we looked around the shop, and we had a lot of merchandise that was just sitting on the shelves. So it was clear that we knew what we needed to learn how to do, and that's manage your inventory and do it well. And there's lots of systems out there. Kristen's gone through several of them, and really she's found this one to be kind of the best, the easiest, the least stressful, and we found a mentor that helped us out with this, started a simple and efficient inventory system, and it really started changing things for us. We had fewer markdowns, fewer moments where we were just trying to get rid of stuff to increase our cash flow. And, you know, now our best sellers are usually almost always in stock, though we do have the occasional person, nano breweries, who forget that they need 20 pounds of roasted barley.
They didn't manage their inventory.
They weren't managing their inventory. So they come in and they're like, hey, do you have 20 pounds of some odd malt? And we're like, yes. And then we're high and dry, and usually right then what happens? Yeah, somebody comes in and they need exactly... Yeah, they want the same product.
10 stir bars.
Oh, yeah. That's honestly, there's one of our wonderful customers is here. He called a week earlier, said, do you have stir bars? I'm like, yeah, we got 10 stir bars sitting on the shelf. That morning, can't make this stuff up. A guy comes in and goes, you got stir bars? Yep. Buys all 10 of them. I have no idea what you need 10 stir bars.
We don't sell 10 in a year.
We're like 10 in a year, maybe. Buys all 10. The guy comes in who asked for the stir bars a week earlier. He's getting his grains. He goes, where's your stir bars? Kristen was back at the bar serving some beers, and she goes, well, they're right there on the shelf next to the flasks. No, they weren't. He's like, oh, man, these guys are pulling my leg. He's a great customer, good friend. Comes over to me, and I go, no, literally some guy just came in and bought 10 stir bars. He's like, so
I'm never coming back.
Never coming back. Forget you guys. And you make terrible pumpkin beer. So anyway, there's a story for that when I ask after the presentation. Now, I do want to warn you that It is going to take some time and some effort, but if you put these things into practice, Kristen and I both know that you're going to see a whole lot of benefit for you as the business owner and as well as your customer, who's going to be always having what they really want in stock for the most part. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my lovely wife, Kristen, who's going to take you through the nuts and bolts of the system. Thank you.
So thanks for coming out on 9 o'clock after brewery night. I know it's not the most interesting topic, but it's really important. And hopefully you can take some of these nuggets, and if you watch the pricing seminar yesterday, a lot of this stuff will pertain to that, and hopefully you can put those two items into practice and work with this. So what is open to buy? The goal of open to buy is to get, oh, by the way, this is a lot of information. I'm cramming a ton of information, so feel free to go back after they will post all of this stuff online, so make sure you go back. And I also have worksheets and stuff that you can apply in your business, and they will all be on the presentations afterwards if you decide this is something that will work for you. So the goal of open to buy is to get your store selling the maximum amount of merchandise while carrying no more and no less than the ideal amount of inventory. In other words, the right amount of the right stuff at the right time. The right amount is not so little that you'll be missing sales because you're out of bestsellers like beer bottles, but not so much that you're sitting on excess inventory that can be cash in your bank. So who can use open to buy? Open to buy is an inventory strategy for retailers. It can be used with as little as $50,000 in annual sales, probably even less than that, all the way up to $1 billion. Conglomerates like Walmart and Macy's use open to buy. However, for each level of sales, it's going to have to be tweaked along the way. If your sales are between $50,000 and $250,000, you can probably do this using just an Excel spreadsheet, even pencil and paper. If you have $250,000 to $500,000, you might want to consider using some software. There is a software out there called My Open to Buy. It's on there, myotbplan.com, that you can use. Over $500,000, you're probably going to need to hire a professional inventory manager, and there is a company out there called Management One. Today's discussion focuses on the principles of how you implement this plan by yourself. This slide is an overview of the steps that I'm going to discuss, and I'm just going to give you an overview before you start. You need to have a good point of sale, determine your specialty, build a department structure, and take a full inventory. These four steps are going to be the hardest one. They're going to take you a couple of months to do. And then after that, after I tell you how to do those steps, I'm going to discuss the open to buy plan. And this plan will be completed yearly and tweaked monthly. So you need to build your sales plan your markdowns, plan your turns. I'm going to go into depth on all of this. Plan your monthly stock needs, your open to buy strategy, and you'll have to adapt it monthly. So the first step before you start your open to buy is get a good point of sale system.
By the way, if you're a husband and wife team like Kristen and I, this will probably mean months of marriage therapy. when we opened, I said, well, yeah, Costco has sharp cash registers. I mean, it does the math for you. We're good. What were you looking at, honey?
Oh, I was looking at an $8,000 system.
Whoa. Yeah, sticker shock.
I won.
She won. She did win.
It's caused some disagreements. It was a big fight for us, yeah. And I did win. And thank God I won, because it has saved me in manpower 10 times over on the initial investment. It helps me with my employees. I can track what my employees are selling. I can track their average ticket sale. So even that, when I do my employee reviews, it's helping me with that. Is it perfect? No. You're not going to find one that's perfect. You just have to find the best one that's right for you. But I can't stress enough that every retail owner has to invest in the highest quality point of sale that you can afford for your store. Your POS system is the main brain, and it should give you reports on items sold, inventory levels, employees, measurements of their selling behaviors, customers and what they're buying, prices, price changes, markdowns, merchandise on order, merchandise received, profit margins, turnover. So many other essential pieces of information that you probably didn't even know that you needed until you pull a report on it. You're like, oh my gosh. Our point of sale tracks our sales by hour, so we can even see which hour of the day we're having the highest sales. So it's helped us hone in on our hours, what hours we need to be open and closed. In addition, it's going to help you with your bookkeeping and accounting procedures, identify and solve employee sales problems, automate your reorder process, just to name a few. Without a good point of sale, you're running blind, and you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. So it's overwhelming, it's expensive, and it's an investment, but you just have to do it. I'm not going to go into detail about how to pick the right system for you. I personally use Counterpoint, and I know a bunch of other homebrew retailers use it as well. If you have any questions about that particular point of sale, I can, I don't sell it, but I guess, but I just can advocate for it. And I have not researched any other point of sale systems since 2015, so I can't give you any advice on anything else except for that one. So the next step before you start your open-to-buy program, before you start doing that, is you have to figure out what your specialty is. Take a look at all of your reports and all of the merchandise in your shop. Where is your cash? Where is your cash in your shop? Your customers are speaking to you with your wallet. Is anything collecting dust? At the very least, you should be selling through every item in your shop every three to four months. If it hasn't sold in 3 months, put it on clearance and don't reorder it. Clearancing items can be really telling. So we clearance items at 50% off immediately if they're not selling. If it goes quick at 50% off, it's an item that I might consider bringing back in the future. If it goes all the way down to 90% off and I still can't sell that item, I end up giving it away or putting it in some kind of bag, I don't bring that item back. And, of course, right after I clearance it, I'm going to have a customer come in and ask for it and say, oh, do you carry this item? Nope, I just clearanced all of them off of my shelf.
I saw it
and
on
I'm
your
not
website.
Bringing them back. Don't feel bad if that happens. It's going to happen. You're not going to be able to carry every single thing. I had a customer, he came in and he wanted D180 candy syrup. This was like 4 years ago. I don't brew Belgians, so I didn't know, but I thought, he's a home brewer. He's actually here at the homebrew convention. He knows what he's doing, so I ordered 10 of those. They sat for a year before I had, and then, of course, as soon as I clearance them out, I have a couple people ask for them, but now he knows that the one time he's the one customer that uses it, that he just orders it from me, he pre-orders it, he plans his beer, and so it just works. So you need to ask yourself as you're going through trying to figure out what you need to sell in your store. Where is my cash tied up on my shelves? What's collecting dust? What's been sitting there longer than 3 months and not turning over? Do I really need 45 of these? This stuff is sitting on your shelf and it's taking up your cash. It's taking up your inventory. So after evaluating your inventory, ask yourself what your customers say. They're talking. Are you listening? What are they buying? Are they buying the consumables like grains, hops, yeast, nutrients, adjuncts? Or are they buying beginner equipment, pails, auto siphons, beginner kits, extract kits? Or are they buying the high-end equipment like Blickman, BrewTech, BrewBuilt, and are they buying it from you? When I first opened, Steve covered a little bit, I had lots of 15-gallon shiny kettles, stainless steel conical fermenters, temperature controllers, and plenty of other homebrew eye candy for everybody to look at. I ended up clearancing these items well below cost, and my customers spoke loud and clear for me. That is not what they wanted from me. They are buying consumables, and I had to change my focus. When they want to brew now, and they want it now. They have time, and they want it. So one-day ship even doesn't work for them. They want it now. So I realized that, and as I was doing that, I realized that there is a large local market nationwide that all of you can capture. It's imperative that we, as small local retailers, stop competing with the big online homebrew stores that have everything. You can't carry everything in your store. We have a brewery and a homebrew store. Our homebrew store takes up about 1,500 square feet in our 2,500 square foot store. So I've become very concentrated on bringing education and teaching new brewers and capturing new brewers, also known as customers, in my local area. I'm not worried about nationwide. I'm not worried. I have a website, but my website does almost all local pickup. So I do 10% of my sales on my website, like the AHA said yesterday, but it's all local pickup. I do very little shipping. So as my customers grow, their equipment profiles are growing as well. So instead of having the tiny fermenters in store and sitting and taking up valuable shelf space and cash, that they're generally not going to walk out with. I have put together a high-end catalog that they can go through, and when they decide to make that equipment purchase, we can help them make an educated guess on what they want, and so it's freeing up cash, it's freeing up space, and they're going to buy that high-end equipment from me because they trust me, they know that they can return it to me. So having the right stuff ensures that your sales are going to be high, perhaps higher than they've ever been. And by paying attention to your inventory levels and sticking to an inventory management program, you'll be forced to make some really tough choices about the merchandise that you can and should bring in. But if you use the process, you'll almost automatically choose the merchandise that your customers want. So your customers are voting with their wallets, and it's your job to tally those votes. Figure out what they want, when they want it, and deliver on it. Therefore, every month you're going to need to run these reports. Going back to the point of sale system, you need to know the top 50 items sold by retail sales, the top 50 items sold by quantity, and the top 50 items sold by profit. These reports can also include the quantity that you have on hand to assist with purchasing. And you can even go, but you can go smaller, you can go top 20, you can go top 100. I wouldn't recommend going any higher than 100, though. But these, narrowing these down and knowing what your customers are purchasing, that's going to help you with your open-to-buy plan when you figure out how much money you have to build it. So the next step in before you start your open is you have to build a department structure. Having a department structure gives you valuable, pertinent information about your business, primarily about what your customer's buying, and it's a critical part of inventory management and a critical part of good business. So your department structure should almost always be about the merchandise and how your customer buys it, not how you buy it or by vendor. So for example, a running sports store has departments like women's shoes, men's shoes, apparel, accessories. So when you walk into a running store, you see the different departments set up. And you know if you're a man, you know to go to the men's shoe. If you have kids in tow, you know to go to the children's department. Your homebrew store should be set up in that same manner, and your department structure should be set up in your point of sale in that same way. So you're going to have no more. Typically, a homebrew store really doesn't need to have any more than four categories. We actually have five at Vine and Hop, but one of them is alcohol because we have a brewery and a winery. So these are the four categories that we use at Vine and Hop: beer brewing, wine making, other fermentation, and both. And I'll cover what both is in a minute here. Sorry, I'm a little off. So changing your department structure and reorganizing all of your existing merchandise is going to seem like a super overwhelming task, and maybe you already have it, but it's really well worth it in the end. And no matter what you call them, whether you change them to different titles, you really need to stick to those four or five departments. When I established the open to buy, it took me a month of thinking, organizing, revisiting the departments. I'd sit down for an hour, write a structure, go back to my store, look at all my products. I was moving stuff around, trying to figure out, and I finally decided on these four departments for the homebrew, and I have roughly 5 to 10 categories in each department. So you're going to start with the big picture, the department, and then most of your point of sales are going to have you be able to designate at least two, usually three levels of detail under those departments. So what names you give them doesn't matter: department, category, subclass, department, class, subclass. Use whatever your point of sale uses for the different levels. I personally use department. It's the biggest and most general group, so my departments are beer brewing, winemaking, other fermentation, and both. And then the smallest, the category, is the next level. So under beer brewing, these, I just only had room for three. I think I have like maybe seven categories under each one. So beer kits, bottling, kegging, beer ingredients. And then there's the subcategory, which is the smallest category. And I don't use that very much, but I do use it for items such as liquid yeast. And I have those under categories as Y Yeast, White Labs, Imperial, because that just helps me with reordering. I can pull the report, see what I'm selling when I have to order from that specific vendor. So as a side note, use these categories to merchandise your store. Our store is laid out with beer supplies on one side, winemaking supplies on the other side, and right down the center is the both category. Those are the pails, carboys, auto siphons that mead makers, cider makers, wine, they all use them. So I like to capture those in my point of sale, and I like to know if I'm selling more beer supplies, am I selling more wine supplies, or is it all kind of right down in, you know, where is it evening out? And so now that you have all of your non-selling items clearanced out, your departments are in place, and your store is laid out accordingly, you have to take a full inventory. In order to accurately know what your inventory is worth, this is the important part, you have to know the dollar amount that you have of inventory in your store. You're going to have to count your entire store, and you're going to have to ensure that the numbers are accurate. You might have to do it for taxes anyways. So starting an open-to-buy program after you've taken inventory is a good place to start. I take inventory every year, so 2 months prior to when I was going to take my inventory, I started all of these four steps to get them in place. So after my inventory was taken, I had everything in ready, and my open-to-buy program was ready to roll. And inventory, it sucks, but we got all of our employees in. We counted every single item in the store. You're going to have to figure out the best method that works for you. I've developed a method that works for us. But they have to count everything. We were able to bang it all out in 4 hours. Yeah, so we had five of us working, and we got our entire store was counted in 5 hours.
Yeah. And if there are any educators out there, please teach people how to count. Because every now and again, you have to go back and recount some of your employees' stuff.
We did, yeah. We did. But so it was accurate, though. So the six steps of open to buy. Open to buy is a planning process through which you determine how much inventory should be on hand at the beginning of any given month and how much new merchandise should be received during the month to maintain your optimum inventory levels. This is a recap of the whole open to buy process, and I'm going to go into depth on each step. So don't worry if you don't understand these terms right away. That's what the rest of the presentation is for. There are six basic steps to creating an effective open-to-buy plan. They can be done on a computer using a sophisticated program. You can use an Excel spreadsheet, or more simply, just paper and pencil and a calculator, which is what I'm starting with you today, paper and pencil. So the first five steps are to build your plan for the whole entire year. Plan your markdowns, your turns, your monthly stock needs, and your strategy. These five are done all at once, all at one time. So just get it done. This takes me, the first time that I did it, it took me probably in hours, it probably took me 24 hours to do. So it was 3 days that I literally hold myself up in the basement and just worked on this plan. But now I've got it down. It doesn't take, but that, remember, I was starting from scratch. And so it's going to take you some time, but it is so, so worth it. Then every month you're going to have to go back and adjust monthly. It takes me 2 hours a month. It takes me 2 hours a month to determine how much I have open to buy and what I need to reorder. I've just streamlined it, so I'm not spending all day doing it. So step one, you have to plan your annual sales. And this is going to be the most important step in the process since most of the other elements of this plan are keyed off the sales plan. I also want to note that all of the dollar amounts are written using retail notation. It's a standard practice for rounding numbers to the thousands and using only one decibel at the point in the hundreds place. So 24,632 is written as 24.6. 149,982 is written as 150. You get it. So onto the spreadsheet. This is Dave's homebrew shop. It's a fictional shop that I made up. And he needs to start by entering sales by month for the whole store. So this is your whole store, what you think you're going to sell each month. In retail sales, this is not your cost. This is all your retail sales, what you think your store is going to sell. You have to estimate that. For ease of this presentation, I just created two departments. He has the beer department and the wine department. So now you have to go through, now you know in January that you're going to sell $16,000 in supplies. So you need to average those out. Where are they being sold? $10,000 is in beer, $6,000 is in wine, equals the January. Same for February, and then you just go all the way across the board and add those numbers in. Where do you get these numbers from? Point of sale.
Previous year sales.
And previous year sales as well. You're going to have to look really closely at each number. Did you have an event in May? that gave you unusually high numbers that you're not planning on having this year? Is there an event in your community that has a changing date, like a marathon in June, that's maybe changed to July that brings in customers? Did you have a brewery come in and buy more than the usual amount of inventory that night? Did you have a big high-end equipment sale one month? You have to use the science from your point of sale and combine it with your art as a retailer and make sure that the numbers are attainable and not too low or too high. So take a really hard look at the plan with your merchant's eye. Does it all make sense? Does anything need to be adjusted? Do you feel good about it? That's important. Do you feel good about it? Finalize it. And there are many ways to do sales planning. This is just the easiest method that I've found, and it works for me. Use a method that works for you. So you have your annual sales. Next, you have to plan your markdowns. A markdown is the dollar difference between the retail price at which you initially own a piece of merchandise and the price at which the piece of merchandise leaves your store. It's a fact of retail. We have to take markdowns, and we have to plan for them. In the open-to-buy process, it's important to take into account the difference between the value at which you own your merchandise and the value at which you sell it, because markdowns decrease the amount of inventory you have on hand. So let's look at Dave's Homebrew Shop markdowns. He plans to have $10,000 in markdowns for the year, and so he's broke them down for the whole store by month, then further breaks them down into his departments. His markdowns are different from month to month because he has to take into account the sales and events that he's having. Maybe in November he has a customer appreciation sales and his markdowns are greater that month. Again, consider what your sales are and what your events down and consider that. Are you having a 20% sale at the beginning of June to prep your store for all the new inventory from HomebrewCon? Well, your markdowns are probably going to be a little bit greater in June. In addition to selling the items at discount, these markdowns is also going to include items that break, are defective, expire, like liquid yeast, or anything else that takes merchandise that you've once owned at full retail value out of your stock at the lower price, even down to zero. So how do you plan your markdowns? Point of sale. Or you should have a report from your point of sale to assist you. If you don't have a point of sale right now in place, you can just estimate a percentage of your sales. A typically good starting point is 2 to 5% of your annual sales. Did I have a thing for that? No. So 2 to 5% of your annual retail sales. So once you have your markdowns in place, step two, we can move on to step three, and that's determining your turn. Remember, our goal in inventory management is to have the right amount of the right stuff at the right time and maximize sales while minimizing cash flow. You have to have enough stock on hand to support your planned sales, but not so much on hand that it's just sitting around tying up your cash. It's a balance, and it's critical to good inventory management. One objective statistic we use to measure the relationship between stocks and sales is annual inventory turnover, or turn for short. It describes the number of times you sell through the average amount of stock you carry in a year. For example, if a store has yearly sales of $500,000 and its average inventory value, that's the inventory that you have in store at any given time, averages out to $250,000 in, again, retail dollars, it will sell through its inventory twice a year, or in other words, a turn of 2.0, or it's going to sell through everything once every 6 months. Likewise, if it has a store of $500,000 and its average inventory value is $100,000, it's going to sell through that inventory 5 times a year, thus a turn of 5.0 or once every 2.4 months. I can't do this for you. You have to determine what stock levels and turnover rates are appropriate for your shop. Turns that are too slow will give you stock levels that are too high. You're going to face markdowns and cash flow problems. If your turns are too fast, the planned stock levels will be too low. You'll miss sales and give poor customer service due to out-of-stock situations. At Vine & Hop, our entire inventory is turned over approximately every 3 months, which is a 4 to 4.2 turn. This ensures that our stock is fresh. It gives me time to test new products, so if I don't sell through them in 3 months, we either reduce the stock for the next 3 months and see how they sell, and if they still don't perform, well, off they go to the clearance bin. So this is what that looks like on a spreadsheet. So this is Dave's homebrew supply. So he's going to enter in his planned sales. That's from step one. He got these numbers from step one. He's going to just kind of guess on his turn right now. And so he's going to do 3.0, see how that starts for him. That's about every 4 months. And then you're going to take, he's going to take the annual sales divided by the turn to give what his average stock should be in the store every month. So he needs, his total store needs to have $83,300 every month in his store. And they need to be divided out between those two departments. And again, these numbers are going to come from your point of sale. Your point of sale, you should be able to pull that department category and see how much stock you have in task every time. So again, when you've completed the table, you're going to look at the number. Does it seem doable to you? Do you think that they're too high? And this is where you use your pen and your paper, your pencil and your calculator, and you can go back and adjust them. Or also, I have an Excel spreadsheet with that. I already have all the formulas plugged in that they, the AHA will link to on the presentation slides. So now you can now with your turns in hand, you can project your stock needs for the next year. It's the fourth step in developing your open-to-buy plan and probably the trickiest, but there's a few terms that you need to know when we're talking about stock levels. So the beginning of month inventory, or BOM, is a snapshot retail dollar amount that tells you exactly how much inventory you have on hand at the moment the store opens on the first day of the month. End of month inventory is a snapshot dollar that tells you exactly how much inventory you have on hand at the moment the store closes on the last day of the month. This is going to be the beginning of the month number because the end of the day at the last day goes right into the beginning of the month the next month. So you really only have to figure this out once. Unless somebody comes into your store and robs you overnight, it's going to be the same. And then rolling inventory. And this is the method for planning to receive merchandise in advance of your sales based on your planned turn rate. Using this method, you're going to have a smooth flow of merchandise coming into the store based on how much you are planning to sell in the upcoming months, rather than having large spikes in inventory come in that are difficult to pay for out of cash flow. We've all had that $8,000 bill from LD Carlson that we're like, oh my God, how am I going to pay this next week? So this is going to help reduce some of that stress. And again, I just want to, these are retail numbers, not cost. So using your sales plan for the year, which you developed in step one, and your turnover rates that you developed in step three, you're going to calculate an ideal stock level for the beginning of each month of the year. So here's Dave's homebrew shop again. We already established that Dave is planning a 3.0 turn for the next year. So with, oh yeah, this is that one, okay. Sorry, I lost my place. With a 3.0 turn, he's going to be selling through his entire stock of inventory approximately every 4 months. So he wants to have the next 4 months of upcoming sales on hand at the beginning of the month. So to plan for his January beginning of the month inventory, he adds up the sales that he's planning for the months of January, February, March, and April and adds them together for a planned beginning of the month inventory of $78,000. To plan his February sales, he'll add up February, March, and April and go to February. Then we're going to get to October, and we run out of months. So he has to swing back around and go to January and add those up, and that gives him his October sales of $82,000. That's what he needs to have for his inventory.
Right, the size of your circles, remember up at the top, is based on your turn. Because Dave had a 3, he's grabbing a 4. If you're turning your stock faster or slower, that will determine the length of the number of months that you'll need to be circling to bring into the next one.
Yeah, so we're turning at a turn of 4, so I only do 3 months. So I do 3 months in advance instead of 4 months. I think it actually is like, it's like, what is it? I do like 11 weeks. It's like 11 weeks or something like that that I plan for. So planning this way, your stocks will go up in anticipation of rising sales. Like for us, summer is really slow for us. So I hardly had to order anything last month because my inventory was already kind of where it needed to be for the month of June. If you see like in Dave's, he has his lower numbers in November, December, January because he might have slow sales that month, and thus his stock levels are decreasing, and it's freeing up cash for him to buy other things and invest in other things. So once you've developed your rolling inventory stock plan, you may decide that some of the numbers don't make sense for your business, and that's fine. Just go through and adjust them. If you want to lower them somewhere, lower them. It's okay. So next, you need to calculate the open-to-buy plan for the month. You have everything you need to build your open-to-buy plan for every month of the year. Once you have planned sales, markdowns, and stocks, you can calculate how much in merchandise to receive. In other words, how much money you have open to buy each month. Start with your beginning of the stock plan and subtract the sales, because that decreases your stock levels. Subtract your markdowns, because that decreases your stock levels. And the number left is the stock that you have on hand at the end if no merchandise is received. When you're trying to figure out how much you should buy for the next month to achieve your ideal stock levels, compare that result to the desired end of month stock levels, and the difference is how much merchandise you should receive during that month. So let's look at Dave. So Dave's beginning of the month in January is $78,000. He anticipates that he's going to have $16,000 in sales and $700 in markdowns, and he wants to have $88,000 in stock at the end of the month. Thus, he's going to have to purchase $26,700 of merchandise during January to achieve his planned end of the month stock. So here's the calculation shortcut. You're going to take your beginning of the month sales, minus your markdowns, minus your end of the month stock, and that's going to equal your open to buy. The signs around that, around the open to buy, is the absolute value sign. So when you finish the calculation, all you do is disregard the negative number and turn it to a positive, and that's how much money you're going to use to open to buy. So it's a real quick, easy, you can use it, like I said, you can use it with a calculator. You are going to have to create one of these sheets for every department, and your whole store. So basically, if you have four departments, you're going to need five sheets. So you have to do a beer one, a wine one, other fermentation, and then a whole store. So you'll have to do one of these sheets for each department. Dave's open to buy yearly sheet looks like this. So it's all on one sheet. And again, these will be downloadable for you if you decide that you want to use them. So this is his whole year. And he has the plan on one side. That's what he's planned for his whole year. And then each month he has to go back before he orders. He has to go back, plug in the actual numbers, and change that open to buy depending on what he sold for the previous months to determine how much he has to purchase for the next month. Or if he thinks that his sales are going to be lower or higher for next month because he's thrown in an event, he might have to reorder. He might have to change his end of the month stock to make it a little bit bigger. I spent a lot of time, and these numbers have been really accurate for me. I took a lot of time taking it, and I'm usually only off by about $400 at the end of the month. So it really has streamlined our process, and it's working for us. All right, so step six, which is kind of what I covered once you have all of this in plan, you just have to go back and adjust. Compare the plan to the actual results each month and fill in those actual numbers. For example, and I already said that if his flow is alternating, if sales alternately, if they're increasing, he's going to have to buy more. And that's pretty much the science of it. Dave has to decide what he's going to buy. I can only show you how to determine how much to buy. I can't tell you what your store needs. I can only help you determine how your dollar amount that you're going to have in stock. You're going to have to narrow that down and figure out your merchandise. Clear as stout, right? All right, any questions?
Was the last numbers?
Yeah.
On the slides that were just back, were those retail numbers not actual cost?
Not cost, yes.
So you have to figure your average margin number to figure what you're purchasing.
Yes, yes. And I'm just covering the retail. I actually do two sheets. I do one cost sheet. Because that's a cash flow issue. You have to figure out your cash flow. A good point of sale system is going to tell you on your purchase order what the retail amount is. My purchase orders tell me what my retail is, and they tell me what my cost is. So if you're having some cash flow problems, you might have to go back and do a worksheet for cost. But it is a little bit harder because you're going to have to make sure that those numbers are matching. So you're going to have to make sure that you know what your profit margins are and make sure that those two spreadsheets match up together with each other.
I look forward to seeing this on...
Like I said, I have Excel spreadsheets that you can plug in all your numbers and it'll do all the formulas for you and everything.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? I buy once a month.
Just once a month?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't receive all of it. I buy once a month from all my vendors. Now, I live really close to LD Carlson. We're 50 miles away from LD Carlson. So I might end up having to do an emergency order like the third week of, depending on if our sales were. But I do once a month. It helps me with my employees. I'm not receiving inventory all the time, stickering. It just decreases my time. It decreases my employee time, decreases my stress. Just like you guys, we order BSG, Brewcraft, LD Carlson, all your liquid yeasts. I just do them all. I stagger them throughout the month. I have them set at which... I order LD Carlson the first week every time. I order my liquid. All my liquid yeast gets ordered the second week of the month because I do pre-orders on my liquid yeast. And so my customers know to pre-order it, and then it gets ordered. And then BSG and Brewcraft aren't as big sellers for us just because the shipping for us is really expensive. So we order from them the third week. And that also I can – if I'm missing anything from LD Carlson, if I'm missing anything like – metabisulfate or something like that, I can put that onto that BSG order.
Yeah, like when someone comes in and asks for 10 stir bars.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to wait a whole month to order them. You'll just get them from, you know, BSG or LD Carlson or one of the other vendors that happens to have them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might mess with your profit margin just a little bit, but at least you'll have them back in stock by staggering your ordering.
Yeah. So, yep. I don't understand.
Are they decreased because you're ordering less frequently?
They're decreased because even LD Carlson, we just have a little minivan, and we have to order pallets from them. So for us, if we order a pallet, one pallet is going to cost $160 for us, even though we're only 50 miles away. One pallet, but if I order two pallets, it's like $180. So it doesn't make sense to have that initial cost. So it's definitely cut down on my freight.
And following up on that, the best part of following this open to buy plan is by freeing up a lot of that capital you have maybe just sitting on your shelves and overstocked and by not planning it, instead of ordering, you know, 30 cases of bottles at a time, you can now match it out, plan it out, and you just order a case. Which then increases your profitability even more because obviously the more you buy, the less it is. So now your shipping goes down and your cost per item can go down. And if you have a good POS system, it'll actually automatically adjust as you're entering your purchase orders with the prices so that you can, you know, maximize your profitability as well as have the stuff in stock.
Yeah, our profit, since I started open to buy, we started really using this in December, and our profit margins have jumped 5%. Just because I'm able to decreased my freight, because I put my freight into my cost, so I've decreased that, and because I'm making bigger buys, so I'm getting that discount. You know, when you buy one, your price goes down when you buy those higher quantities. 160 ounces of hops, you know, BSG, 160 ounces of hops is going to be cheaper than buying 5-10 packages of hops. So I can plan those months and I can plan that. And if it sounds scary at first, it is a little scary at first. I actually, my inventory levels were way low. So we had some pretty big bills when we first started building
more
this
marriage up. Therapy.
Yeah, because our inventory levels were like $20,000 before what they had to be. So we slowly increased them over each month. But, I mean, it's working for us.
And that's why it's going to take a little bit of time and effort. If you sit down and you work all of these sheets and you figure out that, you know, you're overstocked by $40,000 worth of product.
Which I found out I was.
Yeah.
So I was always struggling June, July, August. I was always struggling because I actually had too much inventory in my store, so I was able to decrease. So this year I decreased it, and I'm a lot less stressed.
Yeah, but we're not recommending you go straight for 90% off, clear the house out, and lose all of your profitability. It's kind of a feathering thing where over the months you can begin to slowly kind of adjust things to bring them in where you need.
On our shipping, you mean? What it's costing on our
freight in cost? You think it's 8%, 5%, 10%?
It's lower than that. It's probably 1%.
1% of gross sales.
Our freight costs, yeah. I don't even use freight. I actually just adjust my purchase orders based on my shipping. I raise all my prices doing that. I just raise all my prices, and I'm just. Because we order only once a month, I know what my shippings are from month to month, and I know if they're going up or if they're going down. BSG is going up on me, so I'm ordering less from them.
Yeah. So part of this comes down again to the POS system, because what will happen is in the POS system, we can set that for this particular item, we want to have a margin of 30% markup. So as we type in what our freight was for that particular shipment, it will do that cost averaging and say, hey, if you'd like to keep that, then you need to raise that price 20 cents per item of this because of your new shipment that you've received. So it's basically kind of automatic if you have a good thing, a good POS system, so you don't actually have to sit down and constantly recalculate. And then you as the owner can make the choice. Do I really want to raise my airlocks up 3 cents at this point? Or do I want to wait until maybe it's a 20-cent raise, and I'll just take the small hit on the freight, depending on what your item is? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but when I say freight in, I'm talking about everything, all the shipments in. So that would be freight, it would be non-freight, like White Labs and White's, two-day shipping and everything like that. You still think it's at that 1%?
Yeah. Cost? Oh, for sure. Our freight, yeah. Because I'm ordering in such large amounts. My freight is minuscule, maybe 2%. I mean, yeah, if you look at a Y-East order, I mean, I have to order from Oregon, two-day shipping overnight. My freight is substantial with that. But if I average it out throughout my whole store, 1% to 2%.
Thank you.
Yep.
You were mentioning that you're growing at, 40%. So how are you managing that growth with your inventory levels?
Anxiety medication.
Okay. And marriage therapy.
No, it's honestly, that's why we had to start this open to buy program, because I had to figure out what I was, and now I'm anticipating those sales. I wasn't anticipating those sales. We grow so fast. I'm just thankful for our customers, because we grew so fast that I was having a heart attack last fall. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't keep anything in stock. We were ordering constantly, constantly, constantly. And now, so we had to hire more staff to keep up with the levels. But yeah, 40%, we're probably not tracking for that right this year. I'm looking at a little more conservative 25%, which I've budgeted for. So I've put that in, and that's what you'll have to put into your open to buy plans. You're going to have to go, am I going to have an increase this year? Am I going to have a 10%, a 20% increase this year? And you're going to build that into the, so this year I built in a 20% increase, but went conservative.
No, thanks. And how about managing inventory in terms of, do you have to do a regular kind of inventory sync? Are there certain products that you're having to always kind of make adjustments? And I'm thinking of, grains and, some of the consumables.
Oh, as far as recounting the inventory?
Yeah.
Yes, we have. And so part of our inventory is we have sections of our store that we can pull our inventory sheets from the point of sale just for that section. And I've actually put all of those, and this was a lot of work. This was probably, when I say that, it took me, I hold up in my basement, because it took me a while to get all of those inventory sheets. So I just have to, if I feel my inventory's off, especially in my grain, I actually have my inventory sheets set by shelves. And I can just pull that, I just print that inventory sheet from my point of sale, and I tell my employee to go count that because something's off over there. And so all of our grains are in one area, so I might have him. And I have, like, four shelves of grains, and so I'll just have him go one day, and he'll weigh all the grains, and when we set that, yeah.
But more ad hoc, not like a regular.
Throughout the year, you're going to have to make little adjustments. Yeah.
Yeah. Grains we do a lot of, because, again, customers are great. We have self-service grain, and they do the best they can. The problem is if everybody's off by just a little bit and you have 1,000 customers, well, now you thought you had 3 pounds of a random grain that you never really sell, and suddenly the bin is empty, and you kind of look a fool. So those kinds of items that you know get used a lot. And, again, being a brewery, it's nothing to be out of a washer and just go grab a couple washers. And employees or owners will sometimes not write that down, more marriage therapy. And, you know, different things in the store as you've been doing this over a couple of years, and we've been doing this now for 4, we just kind of know there are things that walk and disappear from one reason or another, certainly not me. And we do count those much more often. And then there's that one time a year, you order the pizza, you have fun, you shut the whole store down and try and get an accurate thing. But what Kristen said is probably the most important part. If you're going to have inventory, you want to make it super easy. So setting up sheets or your POS system where you can just do 1 or 2 shelves or 1 or 2 gondolas or just your back wall makes it real easy for employees or yourself in some downtime to make sure that your counts are accurate.
Yeah, the brewery and the winery probably don't consume anything from the store. So
Never. Yeah, no.
All completely separate.
Yeah, no, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had one more. I know we're in the 21st century, but how do you order through your suppliers?
Purchase orders. I email purchase. Well, okay, so I do different things. LD Carlson, I submit a purchase order. BSG, I order online. Y-Yeast, I submit a purchase order. Brewcraft, I order online. It just depends. But I still fill out a purchase order. It's just, I suppose I could fill out a purchase order for all of them. Some of them I just prefer. It's easier for me to just order online and click.
Yeah, but in our POS system, even if we're just ordering online, all of those will have a purchase order in the system. This way here it can take all of the costs of items because it never fails. You can't just hit print because as you're going through, your vendors will sometimes change your prices on you, which, of course, affects your margins. So you want to make sure that every single purchase order, and it seems tedious and very time, you know, it's a time sink, but without having those accurate numbers, you'll never have any idea when it's time to kind of raise your prices based on what you're looking for a certain margin in a certain category.
And I go through every purchase order and I print them off, and as I'm reconciling them with my invoices, I mark down, you know, LD Carlson's been raising their prices. I'm sure you guys have noticed 10 cents, 10 cents, 10 cents. Well, we have to raise them too. We can't, some of them you eat, but some of them you've got to raise. So you have to be on top of those. And if you don't have a point of sale system that you know what your last cost was, you don't know where you're at.
Just curious, does your point of sale system, how does it handle grains? Like, for instance, can you do 2.4 pounds?
Yes.
Or do you have the ounces and the pounds and the 50-pound bag?
We can sell by the ounce. We can sell by the quarter. We can sell all the way to 3 decimal points.
And are all of those together under one? So say 2 rows. Do you have you've got a bag price, 2 row. Where you have to enter how many pounds. You have to enter how many ounces.
Yes. So we have different units. You can add in counterpoint. You can add different units. So you can have a 50-pound bag. You can have a 1 pound, and then you can have an ounce. And we can charge. But when you enter it in store on the point of sale, you can enter it in as like 0.25. Which would be a quarter pound.
And then, so when you pull a stock number for 2 row, all of those, doesn't matter how they're all, so you know the accurate amount of what you have of 2 row.
Yes. Yeah. You can go to our website, too, and just pull up one of our grains, and you can see how it organizes the grains. We just did a website revamp, and last year, and I just realized that customers, I was selling grain by the ounce, and so they were ordering like 4 ounces. Well, I just realized that I don't have to do that anymore. I can sell it by 0.25 pounds. on my website, which I wasn't able to do before, so we're having to change that over, but that's a large undertaking. So, anything else? I think Millie's waving at us.
Get off the stage. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.